Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain.
And now it's the Mike and JD show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert. And for now, I'm going solo on that ass, but it's still the same. We got all kinds of wrestling to talk about today. JD will be in a little bit. You guys are going to find this hard to believe, but JD is having technical difficulties. He actually went and got his internet fixed, but now his computer shit on him. So it's like one thing after another with JD's. He needs like an in-house like tech support. I think we got to send some nerds to his house to keep his business up and running. But I told him, I was like, dude, I just can't, like, it's, you know, 10:15. So I gotta keep the show rolling. I can't stay up too late. But we will be talking about the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. We're going to preview it. We're not going to give our ballots just yet. Because we both like to be very thoughtful with our ballots. And so we got a lot of research. I got some podcasts to listen to. I know over the weekend, Garrett and Dave did one with Ethan Tyler and John Muse that I want to take a listen to. I started it. I haven't finished it yet. So take a look at that. I know I'm pretty sure Joe and Rich are going to do one, and I'm pretty sure that John Pollock will do one, and then I'll do my own reading. I have to do some of my own research on this stuff. I got all the notes for the Hall of Fame. I got that ready to go, but we're going to do that towards the end of the show. What we're going to do is, since I'm just fucking here, I guess we'll do a little bit of Brace for Impact to start this week off with, because TNA actually had I wouldn't call it a big show, but they had one of their bigger shows. You know, it was a glorified episode of Impact on Friday night with a victory road. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it off with that. And the chat, I see folks in the chat. I do want to see, I want to talk, you know, hit me with your topics if you got anything to hit. Man, Io already wants me to get into the Gail Kim stuff. We'll talk about Gail. I want JD's opinion of the Gail Kim stuff. I don't really think Gail Kim arguing with people online is news, but we'll talk about it. That's fine. Stephen Patrick says JD can upgrade from AOL. I don't think it's an internet issue this week. I think his computer crapped out on him. So I do podcasts by myself every week. So I'm like, I can go with JD or without JD. I'm pretty comfortable either way. I prefer to have JD, but if I need to roll by myself, I can do that as long as I got the chat. You guys keep me honest. You guys keep me sane and you keep me entertaining. So just throw some shit at me. Let's have some fucking fun tonight. Online man says, I don't see Ricky dropping NXT title to Trick just 3 days after winning it. It'd be Ricky versus Santana for BFG. I don't know what in the fuck you're talking about, online man. I don't think that, that's happening. I don't think they're doing Ricky versus Trick anytime soon. I don't think that's the case. Unless somebody can, I didn't watch No Mercy, so somebody can educate me on that, but I don't remember seeing that. But guys, before I get started, actually, I need to give a shout out to John Alba. If you're seeing the, if you're like, I think I'm going to change the thumbnail because I didn't really like the way it came out, but tonight's thumbnail, I stole a picture from John Alba's Twitter. So, second time I've done that. So I just want to give him a shout out. You know, he does a good job over at Sports Illustrated. So I just want to give him a shout out. So, let's see. Io says, just to clarify, Ava booked Oba versus Trick and Invasion, no interference. And then Gerard says he thinks it's going to be Ricky versus Oba for the title and Invasion. Episode from Ava sounded like I did it. Okay. I don't know what that means, guys. Okay. Yeah. So is it, are they doing at Invasion, guys in the chat, are they doing Invasion, the Invasion show? Are they doing Ricky Saints versus Trick Williams? Or is it just the matches that they announced, the Survivor Series matches, and then, of course, the tag team title match? So you guys figure that part out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get into the Victory Road review. This Victory Road review will be the only Victory Road review on the Voices of Wrestling Network because Joe and Rich, they washed their hands of all things TNA and NXT, specifically Rich. Rich threatened to burn it down if he had to watch it. So he's not interested in either TNA or NXT. As far as TNA goes, it's, he didn't think the show's any good, but he also doesn't like the production, which I can't blame him there. It's pretty bad. Even it's not like I thought the production of Victory Road for Edmonton wasn't like as bad as it normally is. They still had like one camera that was off color. That was like they would be cutting to different cameras and all of a sudden Moose looks fucking green. So I'm just like, oh my God, man. I'm like, why can't you guys get it together? Like I don't understand. I can watch world-class championship wrestling from Dallas in 1982 inside of the Sportatorium, a shithole, right? But a legendary shithole nonetheless. And they got like, four or five cameras. They're all color corrected and it looks fantastic. And I'm like, why can't TNA in 2025 do that? Like, I don't get it. But technology nowadays is like way better, yet here they are still way behind. But, all right, pre-show, hold on. A swig of water for the working man. Chat, I'm monitoring you guys. I'll get back to you guys in a couple minutes. The pre-show, they did have a good match between Zach Wentz, Cedric Alexander, and Trey Miguel. Trey Miguel betrayed Wentz at the beginning of the bell. It was a pretty good match. The finish came when Wentz nailed Alexander with a cutter for the pin at 7:51, picking up the win. So that was good. Cedric Alexander is signed with TNA now, so that's news. you know, another TNA using their strategy of going to Orlando at the wrestling unemployment line and signing another WWE star. So they picked up Cedric Alexander. Cedric's great, obviously, like actually great. Not a star. Not everybody is a star, but he is like, without a doubt, a really good wrestler. Okay. So Gerard says they are not doing that match. So, okay. They're not doing Ricky Starks versus Trick Williams at NXT Invasion. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we were all clear on that. Oh, hold on here. We got somebody. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to JD Oliva. We're coming to work, JD. Oh, there. I got an applause button now.
I'm plugged ready. We'll see if the Ethernet cable works.
You're already kind of cutting in and out a little bit, but we'll see. It seems like it's a little bit better than last week, though. So JD, I'm just running down the Victory Road results real quick, and then we'll get. But I've already done an intro, and then we'll backtrack, and then we'll get caught up. Okay. And also on the pre-show, AJ Francis hosted the first class penthouse. He had Matt Hardy, and then he put Matt Hardy through a table because obviously they're doing the tables match next month with the Dudley Boys. So there you go. Then they basically set up a match for later in the show, and they ended up having their own table match. At some point, Steve Maclin was backstage for an interview, and he's fired up. He's talking about his match with Frankie Kazarian. And out of fucking nowhere, he gets interrupted by Judas Macias, former TNA legend from the early days, but who is now signed with AAA. And so I think they're teasing, they're going to be bringing in AAA wrestlers into TNA now. And so Macias, who's a TNA or a AAA guy, looks like he's going to do a feud with Steve Maclin. So there you go. That played a factor later on the show. Of course it did. And then we go to the main card. System, Eddie Edwards, Brian Myers, and JDC took on the Order 4, Jason Hotch, John Skyler, and Special Agent Zero, who is the guy that they tell everybody, JD already left, the guy that they tell everybody is a monster, but he is no bigger than Matt Cardona or Moose. So, but he is he is a pretty big guy, but he's just not like, he's not like, it's not like he's 7 feet tall or anything like that, but he is an impressive specimen to say the least. Anyway, this is really quick and the system won. And then we go to the next segment, which was pretty weird. We had Ash by Elegance. Oh, what the hell? JD, I'm trying to get you in. Okay, there you go. Ash by Elegance comes out. And originally she was scheduled to wrestle Masha Slamovich at Victory Road. I was under the impression, it was never promoted as this, but I was under the impression that it was the main event because they didn't have a world title match and they typically don't put the X title on as the main event. And I didn't think that Steve Maclin versus Frankie was going to be the main event. I just assumed it was going to be Ash versus Masha Slamovich. Well, earlier in the week, Masha Slamovich gets herself into trouble. JD, did you hear about this?
Yeah, she's up her boyfriend or something, right?
I guess she'd been abusing him for a while. I hit him in the head with a frying pan at one point, and had been not only physically but verbally and emotionally abusive to the guy. And it all had come out on the same day that her PWI 500 ranking—I don't remember where she was ranked—but that all had come out, and so she's essentially persona non grata. She was pulled from the match. She's been taken off all of her indie dates and has gone the way of Joey Ryan and Marty Scurll. I do think that she'll return to the scene. She's pretty young and, it's just a weird situation. I do think she'll come back if she is able to repent in a good way. But she made it announced. She actually put out a statement. She didn't deny anything. So she just said that we're in a mutually destructive relationship, which I could probably see that, but I hope that she's going to be okay. And I hope that the boyfriend is going to be fine. And, you know, they can get back to doing their job, which is pro wrestling. But for the time being, she's essentially been canceled. So, but Ash comes out. I assumed this was going to be an open challenge type situation, but she comes out and she's kind of like emotional on her face, and Carlos Silva and Santino Marella are in the ring, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? And she gets the mic and she almost starts crying immediately. I was like, oh God, what happened? And she said she's not clear to compete. She had to relinquish the title. And so the entire match had been scrapped. And it doesn't sound good for Ash by Elegance. I don't know what's going on. I could probably ask around, but I'm not going to, because it's none of my fucking business. I think that that's better left for her to come out with her own story. I'm not going to poke and prod around that. And I think that is the appropriate way to handle this situation, because how emotional she was when she was given that announcement did not sound like it was a good thing, and that she could be out for an extended period of time. Maybe even, you know, you hate to tell somebody that they're going to retire, but it just sounded so sad. So I feel for her. I do think that she had been improving a lot this year, and so much so that they put the title on her. And I was expecting her to have a pretty good match with Masha Slamovich, because they had worked before and it was good. So, but we didn't get it. So anyway, she leaves the ring and Santino Marella announces that they're going to do a battle royal, and the final two competitors in the battle royal would then have a match later in the evening. So right away when you do that, the whole thing's fucking convoluted, right? So now because people they're used to these battle royals, and then like there's one person left standing, but instead they did it where there's two people left standing. In the battle royal, you didn't really have any top contenders other than, you know, Danny Luna. Jody Threat had been, you know, a contender at one point, but everybody else, it was the Inspiration, who they're not contenders. You know, they've been a tag team. The Angel Warriors have never, like, I think Lei Ying Li at one point did challenge for the title, but, you know, she wasn't really looked at as being a contender. And I think her and Zaya Brookside are a, you know, full blown tag team at this point. You had one like Edmonton wrestler that nobody knew who she was, even the announcers. And when she got eliminated, Tom Hannafin said, well, yeah, that person's eliminated, whoever that was. So that was so like the announcers didn't even know who was in the fucking match. But anyway, the final two was Kalani Jordan from NXT and Lei Ying Li. And so the battle royal was one of the worst matches I've ever seen in my life. It was terrible. Speaking of terrible, Hometown Man and Matt Cardona took on the Nemeth brothers, and the Hometown Man got a small package for the upset win in about 6.5 minutes. And then post-match, the Nemeth hit Cardona with a danger zone and unmasked Hometown Man. So there you go. And then we had Mike Santana and Rich Holland. They had another, you know, like less under 10-minute match. It was actually pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was like a good little TV match. But again, this was supposed to be a bigger show. It came across as a TV match. So, Mike Santana got the victory there. Mustafa Ali battled Moose in one of the best matches of the night. I thought they both did a great job. They had told everybody that they weren't going to have interference, but naturally Tasha Steelz got, you know, interfered there towards the end. She was dressed as a dancer and came in and hit Moose with a low blow. And then of course, Mustafa Ali got the victory at 12:18. Joe Hendry and Eric Young was right after that. Surprisingly, Joe Hendry won. He has not won a match in a long time, but he got the victory there in about 12 minutes. And then Matt Hardy got his revenge on AJ Francis in a tables match. You know, obviously previewing the Dudley Boys match that's happening at Bound for Glory. That was less than 10 minutes. Matt Hardy did a leg drop from the top rope to the outside through a table onto AJ Francis. The match was fine for what it was. Wasn't anything special, but the people like to see Matt, and AJ Francis is a good heel. And then the vacant knockouts title match was Kalani Jordan versus Lei Ying Li. I was watching this match, and I think Kalani Jordan's pretty good, but Lei Ying Li, I just felt was just way better than her. Indy Hartwell was the referee. But sure enough, you know, this would have been the spot. I would have put Dani Luna in the spot. Dani Luna's a heel. She's been getting built up as a heel. She wants the title so bad. I think if they would have put the title on her, and then if she lost it in a few weeks to Indy Hartwell, I think that would add layers to her story. That would have been the match to do. And I think Dani Luna might have actually pulled a decent little match out of Indy Hartwell. But instead, they just put her on NXT star Kalani Jordan. There's nothing wrong with her, and I think she is a protege of Ash by Elegance, so there is the tie in there. The problem is that you just put it on another NXT star when they just got it back. Now people are saying this is adding to the invasion story. I don't think anybody fucking cares. Like nothing against Kalani Jordan. Not a ton of personality there. Decent talent. Not exactly famous. And I don't think anybody's clamoring to see Kalani versus Indy Hartwell. But at least with Dani Luna, there's been a build story with her and her request for the title. I thought Vicky Road would have been the time to put that belt on her. But they did it. And Kalani is a baby face. So it doesn't really fit in with the storyline, you know, like NXT and TNA world are heels, right? And going into Bound for Glory, you would think that you'd want that belt on a heel if it's going to go to an NXT star, but it just went to Kalani Jordan. Frankie Kazarian then challenged Steve Mac for the international title. He got the victory. El Macias distracted Macklin, and then Kazarian hit a low blow. Essentially the same finish that they had in the Mustafa Ali match earlier. Match was okay. Not bad, not great, but it was like a solid wrestling match, right? And then in the main event, match of the night, probably match of the week. I'm sure somebody else kicked out of more shit at some point. But I thought that Leon Slater defending the X Division title against Myron Reed was fantastic. It was a classic X Division, tons of flippy shit, tons of kickouts, tons of wild and crazy moves, exactly what it should have been. Of course, Leon Slater got the victory after the match was over. One, Santino Marella came out and announced that Leon Slater's title will be defended again at Bound for Glory against none other than Javon Evans from NXT. Javon Evans, who had just wrestled Sami Zayn on SmackDown. So I thought that was fantastic. So great way to close the show. Really good main event. I really dug it. Now the show itself was fine. Like I said, it was a glorified episode of Impact. So I don't think that many people watched it. It was going head to head, kind of with SmackDown because it came on at 9 p.m. I didn't get a chance to watch all of it on Friday night. I had to wake up Saturday morning to finish it because it was on so late. But there you go. Okay. I don't know if JD's coming back, guys. He was here and then he was gone and then he was here and then he's gone again. I don't know. I haven't heard from him. So let me do this. Let me boom do this. I'm going to send a message to JD real quick. And then in the meantime, while we wait for JD, what we'll do is, oh, JD is back. Okay. All right, JD, are you there?
Maybe.
Okay, I can hear you.
Yeah, we'll find out. I moved down to my basement, my living room, because, like, I don't know, man. This shit doesn't work. Like, this started with this meal.
Yeah. Well, I just finished talking about Victory Road. So.
Tell me what happened. Like, how was the show in your opinion?
It was a glorified episode of Impact. It was like Impact Plus, essentially. It was fine, but it wasn't anything anybody needs to go out of the way to watch. With the exception to, I would say there was two matches on the show that were pretty good: Mustafa Ali versus Moose and. The main event was Leon Slater versus Myron Reed. And I'll be honest, I did not expect that match to be as good as it ended up being. They sure. gave him time because they were in the main event. They had to kind of like shuffle the card around because of what happened with Masha and Ash by Elegance. I don't know if you caught it, but Ash by Elegance, I think might be retiring. I don't know what's going on with her, man.
I saw that on Twitter. I was wondering, because it seemed like it was out of left field. Like, she's leading up a stable and like, she seemed like she was like kind of one of the focal points of the division, and then she's just gone. That's kind of odd.
Yeah. No, she'd come out and relinquish the title, and it was super emotional. She's a heel, but when she came out and she started crying, she immediately became a baby face. and she didn't say what it was. I could probably ask around to find out what it was, but I'm not going to. I think that's just her story to tell. So, but what I will say is, like, Ash had, like, I had been pretty complimentary of her lately. I know I was tough on her in the beginning, but she had actually improved and kind of like started to hone that character and really got into it. And she actually ended up having like some decent matches as long as she's in there with a pretty good worker. And I thought that her and Masha were probably going to have a pretty decent match. But now both of them are gone. So the Knockouts division took a huge blow. So I'm curious to see how they replenish it. I'm sure they're going to go to Orlando in the wrestler unemployment line and you know, pluck the next two to replace those talents. But I don't see them going out there and scouting stars from around the world. Although they have signed some. But the people that they have signed are super young and they're on explosion. Nobody ever sees or hears from them. So they're not going to use a draft strategy to replace those talents. I get the feeling.
No, it's become a free agency stopover company, kind of, right? Like, you're done with WWE, now you move on to TNA. Right. That seems kind of, or you're just a TNA lifer. That seems what to be it is right now.
Yeah. So TNA. Actually, NXT on Saturday, they had their No Mercy show. I didn't watch it, so I'm not going to review it. But Ricky Starks did win the NXT title. He defeated Obafemi. Obafemi is like the most push guy there. Really good wrestler. I think he's going to get called up. Yeah. During the show, though, their general manager, Ava, Rock's daughter, made the announcement that on October 7th, they will be doing the Invasion show. So remember the Invasion pay-per-view from 2001? They're redoing that, but on NXT as a special episode where it'll be TNA versus NXT. And they're going to do two Survivor Series matches. So 5-on-5, one women, one with women, one with men. And then they're going to do a title-for-title match, the Hardy Boys versus the Dark State for the tag titles. So they're going to be doing that. So, and then that essentially this past Tuesday, TNA invaded NXT. That was the beginning of it. This thing is going to be going on for a while. All signs point towards TNA ending up on CW probably within the next 2 months is what it's looking like. We'll see. Deals can fall through, but I get the feeling that's what's going to happen. And it's, and the Invasion storyline kind of plays right into that. So, what do you think? I know that you remember the WCW one and the ECW one. What are your thoughts on these Invasion storylines? Because I kind of broke it down on Brace for Impact. They said they always start out fun, and then at some point they just peter out, and one side just can't take it if the other side's winning. So the more dominant person just takes over, and like egos get involved, and it never ends up good.
I don't think it can be done right in America. Like, yeah. I don't think it's ever been done right in the U.S. and Japan. Japan is full of these invasion stories. They happen all the time. Famously, like the Choshu, I'm blanking right now on Choshu's army that invaded all Japan back in the 80s. I cannot remember what they were called at the moment, but that's like one of the famous examples of it. And then there was the invasion of Japan that was allegedly the inspiration for the storyline, although this is very different. This is very different. That played out very different. Although that drew a lot of money, right? It led to three main events once in a row with Nobuhiko Takato and like, so what they did right was that this is right away to Muto, because you got to establish who the top dog is. And Shinya Hashimoto eventually for the title. So although just to kind of get it over, like the kind of beat Muto. So they did have a moment in Hashimoto coming in, so probably the most effective. The NWO invasion very quickly petered out into a evil heel, evil like invasion storyline, which is different than an invasion. Like, yeah, I don't think anybody thought that the NWO was a different company, right? And I know Day believes that's what that was, but it was more of a storyline than an invasion storyline. Now, WCW, WWF was like something that I remember you and guys like us were super excited about. 20. And I don't remember an Asian pay-per-view had a huge buy rate. Was it good? I don't even recall if that story, if that pay per view was any good or not.
The only match I can remember being any good at all was Jeff Hardy versus RVD. That was it.
No spoilers.
Yeah.
Was that, they had Steve Austin starting to leave WCW. Like, it just, and the fact that he was from WCW, like, there's so many things, like you said, like the egos of the companies clash so much in these invasion storylines, they never quite work ever. And, like, I don't know. I don't foresee this being any different. I think it'll help TNA. I mean, it's going to help them get that TV deal that they've been hoping for damn near half a decade. And
yeah,
I think it'll be good for them ultimately, but I think they'll wind up on the losing side of that equation because, you know, you think they're going to beat WWE.
Yeah, I think they will. And then when you get to Bound for Glory, which is later that week, there's going to be more TNA versus NXT matches. I get the feeling TNA will probably get the better of those. And then it'll just kind of be that way. Like, whoever's hosting the show will, like, I'm sure TNA is going to win some matches on NXT television. In fact, they have been since the beginning of the storyline. They have. And in fact, I'll go on a limb right now. I don't think it's really too much of a limb. I think the Hardy Boys are winning the NXT titles that night.
Oh, that makes sense.
Which I think would be fairly unprecedented. They are not contracted WWE talents. They are definitely contracted TNA talents. I don't think any non-WWE contracted talent has ever come into the company that in like they're contracted in another company and won one of their titles. I don't think it's ever happened. I was racking my brain and I was like, you know, man, you know, Rock and Roll Express came in '93, but they were fighting for the Smoky Mountain titles. And then whenever they did the stuff with the NWA, those are over NWA titles. Nobody ever came in and won a WWE title. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't think that's ever happened with AEW either. I know AEW has gone to other companies and won their titles, but none of their partners have come into their company and won any of their belts. Other than I think Suzuki won that Ring of Honor TV title, but he's a free agent anyway. So that's the only one that I could think of. I was trying to think of like maybe that's the comp, but if the Hardys do, that's pretty unprecedented for like one of the big two major companies to allow one of their smaller partner companies come into their promotion and win one of their titles.
To be fair, when's that? I don't think that ever happened in WCW either.
No,
you know, like, I don't think I'm trying to think of like because WCW, like I guess because I guess. Won the NWA World, so I guess you could consider last time that would happen.
What, Masachono winning the NWA title?
Well, the NWA title was the title at that time. Like when the NWA rebooted in '92, the idea of it was to be a title that would be defended between New Japan and WCW, and that went out the window very quickly with Barry Windham. The NWA was not the NWA. I think people kind of get confused and think the WCW in the early 90s were simpatico, and they weren't. WCW or Crockett, whatever you want to call it, still a division of the NWA. It just they were the only one left. They were the strongest one, but the NWA board still existed. And this is super controversial because when Flair leaves WCW. Fujinami is recognized as the NWA champion at Starrcade that year. WCW does not recognize that title belt change. NWA does. This is essentially the split in WCW-NWA title, right? This is when it all gets to Kakcha. He does get it back, but then leaves WCW with the NWA world. WF brings the belt with him because he owned it. And the WCW had to buy the big gold belt. So at that time, Lex Luger becomes the champion. So if we're looking back, the title would definitely be Tatsumi Fujinami in 1991. Thanks. Sorry about that. I think.
Yeah. No. You're good. So If the Hardys do, I think that's, I don't think it's like a big deal business wise, but I think it's like a big deal as far as like, it just hasn't happened in forever. If at all. Yeah. Io said Minoru Suzuki won ROH TV title. I don't know. Maybe that counts. I don't know. Like he was a free agent and he just kind of works everywhere. And I was thinking, I was like, you know, New Japan, it's always the bigger company. They send their stars to other smaller companies and they win their titles, but the smaller company never gets to go to the bigger one and win a title. Like New Japan, they send people to Noah all the time and they win their titles, but does Noah ever get to go to New Japan and win any IWGP titles? Like right now, Hiromu Takahashi is the junior heavyweight champion in Noah. And I don't think they're going to be sending Kaito Kiyomiya over to New Japan to win one of their belts, right?
No. No. And it's weird because this is probably the only point where Noah and New Japan are like, I know some like listening show Mike and Mandy, but they're actually kind of on similar footing business-wise at the moment. Like yeah. New Japan is not lighting the world on fire at the box office. Like let's be real, New Japan kind of sucks right now. Anyone who says differently is not saying they do. They have
it sucks so bad I missed the entire G1.
That's what yeah. I'm saying. Like New Japan, people like all these poor old nutcases are always like, man, AEW's taking advantage of New Japan, man. It's like, well, New Japan's fucking really bad right now. So, I mean, like, they can do that. And Noah's strong because they have a huge team. They do. They're with, you know, Abima TV out there, so they're doing pretty good. But, like business-wise, like, Noah down and NWA top, or WWE, Noah down and New Japan, Noah up and New Japan down make them similar. But other... Oh, okay. Atlantis Jr. also
won. Atlantis Jr. won the title. Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's like the same. Okay.
Okay,
And you're right, because Max just lost that CMLL World, the welterweight title?
He dropped it to Mystico. Yeah.
I forget what, it's so, Mexican belts are so weird like that. I cannot think. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, I also said, when's the last time New Japan did a U.S. show? That's been a while. I think since...
I went to one in the spring.
Okay, so it's the Chicago one, right? And Windy City Riot was in, what, April?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's probably
okay.
About right.
Okay. Okay, cool. So, let me get to the chat. The chat's been blowing up. I have been neglecting them tonight. We're free on YouTube tonight, everybody. But please support us on Patreon. I'm just giving the shit away for free. But I just wanted more interaction with the people. I kind of miss having the chat blow up. Let's see. Lucky Charm says, should TNA sign more luchas to fill out the division? Of course they should, but they won't know what to do with them. Although Delirious does have a history of booking luchadors pretty well. So I think if TNA were to sign Andrade, I think that Delirious would probably push him.
Is that a rumor? Has that been rumored, Andrade to TNA?
No, it has not. No. If anything, I think signs point towards AEW, but he hasn't signed there yet. So I don't know. I wouldn't rule out any possibilities. He's such a wild card. I wouldn't know what to do with him. So, let's see. Hold on, let me get to a juicy one. Okay. Andy says the invasion will run its course because there are no dream NXT versus TNA matches. That's true. Although I think TNA is having one. Javon Evans versus Leon Slater at Bound for Glory. That is kind of like if you were to put that on a fucking super indie, like that would be a big time match, I think.
Dream is a But it's a good match. Like that's a that's intriguing. And so I don't know if I call it a dream match.
No, when I think dream match, I think of like Sting versus Undertaker or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a dream match.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. Gerard said SRS said he could see Andrade TNA happening. Didn't say they wouldn't be interested despite the disciplinary issues. So I think that would test the TNA relationship with WWE. Can you sign somebody from WWE that just got fired due to disciplinary issues, or would they not be able to? I think that would be interesting to find out if they did sign him, because he's not leaving there on a high note. No. But would WWE allow TNA to keep him from going to AEW? But my thing is like, even if he goes to AEW, he's not helping AEW. He's just another dude, right? And I think he is immensely talented. And if he went to TNA, he would be immediately the best wrestler in that company, I think. So I would help TNA, but he would not do anything for AEW.
No, he doesn't. I don't know what he really does for TNA either, because I don't think he's actually a draw. Like, the thing with it is, Andrade truly believes he's a star, and he wrestles like a star. He looks like a star, but he's not. Like, he's never since coming to the U.S. Dude was a star in CMLL for sure, La Sombra. Since coming to the U.S., what's he drawn? Like, he's never really been a difference maker, and he believes that he is. So maybe going to TNA in that regard, he would get an opportunity to be the top guy. The problem is Andrade is a top guy, is a giant mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, he wouldn't draw any money for them, but he is a really, really good wrestler, and they don't have that many of those. So he would be a difference maker in the quality of the show because of what he's able to do in the ring. So
I agree with that.
Yeah. Let's see. Keep it Wolfson. I don't want to say his Twitter name. He gets all hot if you do that. But Delirious can make Rush a star again. Yeah.
Listen to Delirious as an amazing booker again? Things.
No. I don't think anybody believes that he's a serious booker at this point. Yeah. But. All right, so hey, let's go ahead and get to the. Sorry, I just zoned out there for a second. Let's go ahead and get to the Wrestling Observer. Well, actually, you know what? Okay, we got to fucking talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it, but the chat asked about it. Gail Kim. Okay. I addressed Gail Kim on Thursday night, and I'm clearly very biased when it comes to Gail. I admire her. She and I are friendly, like on Twitter. And she's been nice to me. We did have a good conversation one time, and it was about the news that had come out regarding her, that BQ had broken, that she had given TNA an ultimatum. And if you write a story about her and she hears about it, she's going to reach out to you and talk to you about it. And I admire that about her. And so she went to BQ and talked it out with him, and then she reached out to me and talked it out with me. And I was like, okay. And she just told me her side of the story. And I was like, oh, that's great. And some of what she said to me is going to be confidential, but she, you know, I found her to be an honest broker when she was talking to me about her side of the story. So my experience with her has been just straight shooter and very nice and polite to a guy that, you know, I'm some schlub. She doesn't have to be that nice or polite to. And she was, right. I'm not like a guy that's going to get her more Twitter followers. She's not gaining anything from reaching out and talking to me. So that's been my experience with Gail. Well, earlier in the week, everybody's coming after her because she's talked some shit about death matches. And the point that I made on Thursday was she should talk shit about death matches. If she hates death matches, guess what? That means she's normal, right? Like, she's just like a regular person. Now, the criticism that she gave the death matches, I didn't think was very valid, saying that there's no stories in those. A bad story is still a story, right? Even if you don't like the story, you can't say that there isn't one because there is one. And then people explain that to her, and she's like, oh, okay. So she backed off, and she goes, but they're still too violent for me. I was like, okay, well, yeah, now you're onto something. I get it. Right. So now I get that, right? And She complimented Cornette, right? And then people brought up that Cornette had said some mean things about Riho, and Gail Kim was like, well, Riho, I just feel like she's too tiny. Her stuff's not believable, and she dresses like a schoolgirl. And one time I saw her, and they were shooting the camera up her ass, and that made me really uncomfortable, so I stopped watching her, right? And the next thing you know, you got all these fucking gooners in her fucking mentions blowing her up, because now it's become she went after Riho. Now it's become AEW versus WWE, and because she didn't list out everybody that has been creepy in WWE at the same time that she mentioned Riho, now she's a tribalist, right? So like And she doesn't know that. She doesn't know that that's what's happening. And so she's fighting all these people, but really they're not protecting Rio. They're trying to defend the honor of AEW.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
And then Kenny Omega gets involved. And Kenny Omega vague tweets, because of course he's passive aggressive, and said something to the effect of, you know, another veteran just going after the TKO fruitcake or whatever he said, and not knowing that Gail Kim also hates WWE and has forever. That doesn't mean didn't stop her from trying to get a job there at one time, but she has forever. She was talking about Riho specifically, but now it's being turned into this WWE AEW feud, and when really my read on the situation, that's not what that was. Dave Meltzer gets involved, and here's where she lost me a little bit. Keep in mind, I love this person, right? But she goes, Dave, aren't you the person that people are accusing of being paid by AEW? And I was like, Gail, no, just turn off the Twitter. Like, just stop tweeting right now. I want to like come through the phone and deactivate her account so she can just take a break a little bit. But at this point, she's locked in and she's not stopping, right? And it's just been nonstop for a few days. I still contend that the people that are in her mentions all the time coming after her are way worse than she is. Because I know that she could be nice, and I don't know that any of those people could be nice. So that's my opinion. What is your read on this whole Gail Kim situation?
She threw a lot at me. I had a question from before, and I don't remember what it was anymore. I think she's unwittingly playing a role in the culture war that she might not want to participate in. I think yes. The fact that people are like, how dare Kenny Omega stick up for his protege?
Yes. Since she was 9 years old. Yes.
Yeah, like Kenny look like has a relation has like a. Is Gail that she wants for sure? Like when you point now, here's the thing about when you make statements like that, and you were part of a remarkably sexist machine operated by Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon, and John Laurinaitis, you open yourself up for criticism too.
Yeah.
Participated in that and stuff that some would consider uncomfortable. And you point out something that's uncomfortable, people are going to go, hey, well, what about you? Like, it's like Toby Hooper saying, you know, that movie was kind of violent. Like, you know, Like, it's like, well, that's about that. Like, but she's allowed to feel the way she wants to feel. Her saying that Dave's on the take from AEW over on AEW is a bit ridiculous. Like, I mean, she should be better than this. But here's the thing about pro wrestlers is they all fucking lie. They're all full of shit. They're all trying to put their own identity, like their own ideas across of what they want and what can help them the most. So I don't believe a damn thing anybody says. I think they're all have an agenda.
So with Gail, I think she jumped in it and now she's just in it. And like all these people are coming at her and she's just like defending herself left and right. And it's just getting worse because I don't think she understands the culture that she just jumped into, because when she was an executive at TNA, she never really tweeted all that much. She didn't really interact with anybody on Twitter. But now she's nonstop interacting with people on Twitter. And I'm like, you know, the Twitter algorithm, it is filled with bots that are designed to piss you off, to make you hate each other. Right. And it's just like this, like constantly this. And like it's just nonstop all day, and I think she's getting a kick out of like tweaking a lot of the fans, you know, and like and saying some shit and getting people mad. I think she might even see it as like the new work, like, and she's talking about her like mentors in her life being Dutch Mantel and Jim Cornette, and I immediately went to it was like I think she might be coming out with a podcast. And I thought maybe a Conrad podcast, but I've been told that that's not the case. Not by Gail, but somebody else reached out and said, no, like she's not getting a Conrad podcast. So now I'm like, okay, well, what's this all about? She might just be having fun. Like she might just be messing with people. But I think if you mess with people too much, it could go bad, you know?
Have you seen the new Superman yet?
The little monkeys, right? The little monkeys tweeting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we are right now. Yeah. You know, like you can't trust anything on Twitter. Like Twitter, I deleted my Facebook account this past weekend. So like I'm just kind of over social media in general. I did kind of hang out. I do pop in on Twitter now and then because it's the best place to find like news, especially with wrestling stuff if you want it. But I mean, like, yeah, you can't like engage with humans. Like maybe people you know is one thing, but the second you start talking to people you believe it, guilty, so guilty of this. Like the second you start talking to people that you don't know, like, because you don't know, like, conversation's all about nuance and like, you know, people kind of fuck up and people sometimes they lean into the fuck up and like, you're just going, everything is so personal, especially when it comes to wrestling for some reason. Like, I don't know, man. I think that she should be smarter than to lean into this and to be a little more self-aware. I don't know how self-aware Gail Kim is. I also don't know how intelligent most pro.
She probably just doesn't see Twitter as being like real life, right?
It's not.
I think she's just having fun. I think the people that are saying that she's a bad person need to stop. She's not, right? Twitter, just because you say something stupid on Twitter, that doesn't mean that's not the entirety of your character. I don't think that she's fed-pilled. I don't believe that for a second, because in fact, she did have a tryout months ago and she's not working there. So now, Io said, what about BJ Bethel said today? Well, look, BJ Bethel's got sources over there, and he said that she tried to get a job there. Well, she was very direct with BJ, like she was with me at one point, and told the entire story and said Sanjay Dutt had reached out to her to wrestle, and she declined. And then BJ says he's sticking to his story, but he said he'll add her comments to the story, which is fair. I would say going forward, if anybody's gonna like have a story about a wrestler, you know, I would ask them if it's true. That should be my advice to anybody, because that's what BQ just went through that with Gail, where he posted a story about her but didn't get her side of the story and went with it anyway, and that's what she was so hot about. So I think that's why she's mad at BJ Bethel. She's like, I'm right here, you can talk to me. I told Gail, I was like, guys like me and BQ don't think we can talk to you because we're just two idiot podcasters. But she's like, no, I'll talk to anybody, especially when you're sullying my reputation. You know what I mean? Like, just let me know, and I'll give you my side of the story.
Counterpoint: we live in a post-truth world now, where just because you have someone's side of the story doesn't mean it's remotely true.
Right.
Right.
You still put both out there.
Correct. Now, this is what a good journal, and we've kind of lost the plot on what good journalism is. Like, the idea of journalism, this is why you're supposed to double and triple source things, is that you want to have as much of a complete version of a story as possible. And you want to have a source on the record saying whether something is true or not. And BJ is a professional journalist. And I think that he is, and I haven't talked to BJ about this, so I'm not speaking.
Me either. Yeah.
But like, feels, and I'm sure he's got a line to us. I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm wrong on this. But I think that he's old school and assuming workers are going to be working.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that the word of a professional, I'm just going to be straight up, the word of a professional wrestler valued that much. Like, they're professional. They still pride themselves on working the books, you know? So I kind of understand why, when it comes time to news, don't really want it. Because, I mean, like, look how it is now. People lie all the time. Someone was called out for that. That didn't stop WWE from putting the cameras in at Becky Lynch. Like, oh, she fooled everyone. Oh, like it's just, like, that's what they do. They're just like, oh, yeah, we all know you lied, but they're going to sit. Yep, worked everybody. You know, I wouldn't.
Yeah. When Edge returned to the Royal Rumble years ago, the story was out for a while. Like, everybody knew he was returning, But he was actively attacking people for saying that, calling them liars, calling them marks. Mm-hmm. And then he came. It's just like, mm-hmm. like that's what we get. But I will say, if anybody's reporting on Gail, she is available to answer your questions if you have those. And I would at least, you know, going forward would be my advice to anybody that's writing a story on Gail. Just based on my experience, and I found her, like, to be honest, and I'm pretty good at knowing when someone's lying to me, and I didn't think that she was lying to me when she was talking to me about that story with her leaving TNA, right? Which I'm just now divulging for the first time that me and her talked about her leaving TNA. I've never told that to anybody before. So that's like news, but she felt the need to reach out to me and talk to me about that because she protects her reputation. So, oh, hold on. Gerard says, love SRS, said he had to talk to Gail and tell her whatever she's heard about Dave being on the AEW payroll isn't real. I think Gail just saw someone tweet that. Like, I don't think that she, like, is being told that he's on the payroll. I think she's just, like, in an argument with him and just tweeted
surprised
that, right?
No, she's not there. But would you be surprised if people in WWE locker room would say that, like, pretty much on the regular and happened the last 6 years? I bet they have. Like, I think that's
JD. You cut out. I missed your point, dude. I'm sorry. You cut out. I didn't hear what you said.
I can't win, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Being made in the WWE locker room at this time, that anytime Dave says something positive about AEW, because he's on the take, like, very amongst a certain subset of people.
Yeah. All right, well, let's leave the Gail conversation. I don't think that a veteran retired wrestler arguing with people on Twitter is news. So it's not something I want to cover very often, but people wanted to hear us talk about it. So here we are. All right, let's get to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. We're going to send it home on this. Yes, JD and I are Hall of Fame voters. We voted last year. Let me tell you guys who got in last year. So 2024, we saw Roman Reigns, who I voted for, Shingo from the Japan category, Paul Orndorff, which I think JD and I, both of us, actually, we're the ones that got him in, right? Like, we're taking credit.
It was like three votes that got him in or something like that.
Yeah.
Mike and I, we've both guessed on other people's pods and we're pushing Paul Orndorff in the Hall of Fame. So that's on us.
Yeah, for sure. We did that shit. Well, I think Paul Orndorff had a hand in it, but, like, mostly us. Johnny Rougeau, the Young Bucks, who I voted for Johnny and I voted for Young Bucks. Los Hermanos Dinamita, who I did not vote for because I don't vote in the Mexican category. Shima from the Japan category. Johnny Saint from the UK category. And then, of course, Bobby Davis, the most influential manager in pro wrestling history. He finally made it.
Yes. We also were big for that because Mike, you and I both pushed for Bobby Davis, and he got it by a handful of votes too.
Yeah, there's a kid on Voices of Wrestling, Jesse. What's his last name? Jesse.
What's Collingsworth?
Collings. Jesse Collings. Yeah, he actually wrote a pretty good article about that too. So I want to give him a shout out. I just remember really enjoying his article about Bobby Davis.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to get started with the historical performers era candidates. So I told you last year who got in. So this year we got Ole Anderson, Afa and Siga, Bullet Bob, Arn and Tully, the British Bulldogs, June Byers, Wild Bull Curry, Junkyard Dog, Cowboy Bob Ellis, Pampero Furpo, Black Gordman, and Great Goliath, Archie the Stumper Goldie, Hart Foundation, Sputnik Monroe, Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, the Texas Outlaws, Iron Sheik, Sweet Daddy Siki, Steamboat and Youngblood, Mad Dog and Butcher Vachon, and then, of course, Kerry, Kevin, and David Von Erich. Anybody, I don't want us to give our ballots today. We're going to preview it. Anybody, you get six votes, but anybody stick out to you on this one?
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to say a controversial take. I don't think Arn and Tully belong.
I'll
lay that out.
Yeah,
I think they're overrated. They're only team for 2 years.
I
like, so I yeah. don't.
One of my favorite tag teams to watch, but yeah, they only wrestled for 2 years and then Tully got busted for cocaine and then they were done. And like it was like 1989, right? They were done. So
the 87 to 89, they were tag team. I'm going to go. My first one that always sticks out to me is Sputnik Monroe. I think Sputnik Monroe is such an important cultural figure in wrestling. When we get further to pushing, I was really heavy on Sputnik Monroe last year. I'm really going to push hard for Sputnik Monroe this year. I think as far as integration of pro wrestling in the South, he's a master in it. He's one of the first white wrestlers to really embrace black fandom, especially in the South. Evan and David Von Erich, I think, is important. He got to me. Feeling the Vachons at first. I have to think about it more, but I'm feeling the Vachons right now.
Yeah. I would have to do some research on the Vachons. Kerry, Kevin, and David Von Erich. That's another one where like their peak was so high, but man, was it like, it was only a couple of years. It was like, what, 80, 81 to 83, like into 84. So maybe actually 82 to like mid 84.
I think it's late. I think you got to give it more. I think it's got to be more than 85 and 86.
Well, but David dies, but David's name is on it and David dies in 84, you know?
Yeah. I think when I vote for the three, I think my vote goes for the Von Erich in general, like that Von Erich wave.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong when I do this, but when I think about this, I think of Kerry, like the whole family of what pro wrestling. And I think
so. You're like fucking Fritz and Doris too. You're all in.
Fritz was the booker, man. Horrible Fritz, people. Don't Doris. Get me wrong. They're important.
What about that? What about Chris, man? What about Chris? You think?
Fuck Chris. No.
A little fuck shit.
Fuck that little shit.
So mean. I was setting you up. I knew you were gonna do it.
It's like you've been podcasting someone for years. They know exactly where you're gonna go with them.
Yeah.
What do you think? Who do you like off that so far to start with?
So I think I voted for Cowboy Bob Ellis last year. I think I'm gonna stick with that. And so just drawing power, like he just drew everywhere, and then everybody from his contemporaries. I think they're John Muse and Ethan Tyler talked about it on Wrestling Observer Radio on Friday, which I still haven't finished. I'm gonna finish, John, I promise. That everybody of that era that drew about the same as he did is already in. I was just like, that makes sense to me. Now, of course, I've never seen the guy wrestle, so I don't know if he's good or not, but I just like, you just, it's historical, right? Or yeah, it's historical. So a lot of the historical ones you have never seen before. So,
I just found out isn't it Cowboy Bob Ellis? We thought he was alive. Apparently, he's been dead.
He's been dead for like 4 years or something like that, I think.
Yeah, we thought he was alive though, until because Dave would always say still alive. It turned out he'd been dead since like 2018.
Yeah, and I think John Muse is the one that found that out too. Like I think he did a bunch of research and found it out on Facebook, and yeah.
If you got some dirt, John Muse is gonna dig that shit up and like,
oh yeah,
he's that shit.
Yeah. So where are you at with Ole Anderson on this list? Because I like, it's historical performer candidate, but as like, would you put him in as a worker? Or would you put him in, or should he be moved to the non-wrestler category? What do you think?
Oh, I'm hard on this one, man. I mean, I've come around to Ole was. Like in the late 70s, early 80s, Ole was pretty freaking awesome. As a performer. The ring for what he was, right? For the style of the era. And goddamn, was he a good, like, an epically good promo. I think I'd almost rather vote him in as a non-wrestler, though, because he's a vital role in the early 80s wrestling wars. I'm more willing to think about Ole than I was a year ago. They'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me look at my ballot from last year. I did pull up my ballot. I want to see if I voted for him last year. I did vote for him last year. I think I'm going to vote for him again this year. I don't think there's nobody new that I think is going to take him off of my ballot this year.
I think we argued about Ole last year on the show. Now that I think
we
about
did.
It.
We did. Yeah, so. We did. I think I just heard enough and I'd read enough to where I felt pretty good about putting him in. I'm going to do some more research on Bullet Bob Armstrong. I don't think I'm going to do the Hart Foundation. I love the Hart Foundation. I just don't think I'm there yet. I think these other folks, these other guys got to get in. They had these super long runs. Like the Hart Foundation is, they had a good run. Don't get me wrong, but they weren't on top of WWF drawing tons of money. And, you know, Ole Anderson was a big draw in Georgia and other places. So. Well,
I was a huge draw in the ammo. Bob Armstrong's a big player, Georgia. Like,
yeah.
So I think that, I think Bullet Bob's someone we could talk about. I'm gonna talk to Chris Zellner. I'm doing after next, so I'm gonna pick Chris Zellner.
Chris Zellner's a good guy to talk to about Bullet Bob for sure. And plus, in my opinion, he is the greatest to ever be a wrestling commissioner on a television show. I've never seen anybody better than him.
I agree 100%. Commissioner Bob Armstrong was freaking awesome on Smokey Mountain.
He would come out and he would fine motherfuckers $500. And in 1992 in Knoxville, Tennessee, for wrestlers, that's a lot of damn money, man. Like it hurt them whenever he was fining, like when he would fine the Heavenly Bodies $500 a piece. Like, you knew that was a bad day at the office for those guys.
There's a heel turn by Bob Armstrong that he has. I want to say in like 81. I think that's when the heel turn happens. It's pretty awesome. Disgusting heel, talking about his mistress and shit like that on TV. That's something I want to dig up, but we should actually watch that together. It's cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. We could do that on Patreon. That'd be cool. Yeah. All right, let's go to the modern performer candidates. We got the Briscoes, Edge, Bill Dundee was, I don't think Bill Dundee was on last year, but Dundee's interesting. I always think he'd be historical. FTR, Bill Goldberg, Samoa Joe, The Hardys, Becky Lynch, Drew McIntyre, Mercedes Moné, John Moxley, Hall and Nash, Randy Orton, CM Punk, Cody, Seth Rollins, Sabu. Sabu's interesting. Trish Stratus, and my favorites, Rick and Scott, the Steiner brothers. Anybody that stands out for you this year that you think you're just going to go to bat for?
John, I think that John Moxley, AEW's in a really bad spot. People claim to hate John Moxley. Business turned around with him on top of that death ride. Right? The John Moxley AEW show for the better part of the year. And I think he's just lessened the bleeding over there. He's like been a stopgap. I think his matches are good. I don't understand why people hate John Moxley. It's probably because he's been on top for too long over there. He redid his character. He did something interesting with it. I advocated for him last year. I think he belongs in this year. He became, in the latter half of the 2010s, he became the most important guy to leave WWE and make something of himself. As a shoo-in, personally, for me. That's the guy that stands out.
Yeah, I did not vote for him last year, but I do think that I'm voting for him this year. I wasn't there yet last year, and then he ended up getting another title reign. And I thought it was a little rocky at first, to be honest with you. I thought the Death Riders, like at first, was not good. But by the end of it, they're in a baseball stadium selling out, and he puts over Hangman Adam Page. I was like, okay, you know what? I think it ended up working. So I think they turned that thing around and did a good job with it. I think I'm there this year with him. I don't see anybody that was added that would knock him off for me. So last year in this category, I voted for the Young Bucks. They're in Matt and Jeff, Paul Orndorff. They're in CM Punk, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and the Steiners. I'm probably sticking with the Steiners, Cody, CM Punk, and the Hardys. And you get seven. So that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I got three to add, and I think I'll probably go John Moxley. And then now I only got two spots, and I'm like, man, do I go? I'm not doing FTR yet. I love FTR, but I'm not doing them yet. I could be talked into Goldberg. I could definitely be talked into him. I don't think I'm going there with Edge. The Briscoes I could be talked into just because I, you know, they never drew, but they were really fucking good for a long time and they won a ton of awards. So I love them.
I think arguing for a draw as for draws in modern categories is a little overrated because nobody is a draw, really. Very few people draw your company. I think the Briscoes did draw money for Ring of in comparison to what Ring of Honor can. I think the Briscoes, I think Muse talked to me, those are so such a big deal in the independence. It's so important.
Yeah. What do you think about Sabu?
I think he's a professional wrestler without.
All right, you broke up. You're breaking up. So I'm just gonna jump in real quick. Yeah. I think what you were saying is probably the most influential wrestler of the last 30 years, or one of the most influential wrestlers. The high flying, the tables, the death matches. I think a lot of people copied his style over the years. Also, one of the most self-destructive wrestlers. And had he not been so self-destructive, he might have been like a guy in many different companies. He couldn't keep it together. But I think I might be in on him. I think I could be talked into him, and I get the feeling that there's going to be some dissertations out there and some articles and some podcasts about Sabu, just about how historically significant he is. And I think that's where you would go with it, the historical significance. And I agree with you. I do think he's extremely influential in modern wrestling today.
I think he's one of the most important, the most important wrestlers in the 1990s, as far as what he did to shape what wrestling became. Like, from a table comes out, that's Sabu, right? We still do that, through the table, but it wasn't a part of the act. The table was part of Sabu's act, right? It was Sabu drew across the planet, right? And he was very much his uncle's nephew. Like, he did his business very much like the Sheik, right? And just in a different era. I just think it's the influence of Sabu is just too great to overlook.
Yeah, he has a great case, and I think there's going to be some articles written to argue on his behalf, and I cannot wait to read those. And I think our buddy John is probably coming out with one of those.
Oh, so, I can't wait to look. Yeah. If you actually follows over Sabu, I want to talk to
him. All right, non-wrestlers, we got Dave Brown, the weatherman. Zane Bresloff, Bobby Bruns, Bob Caudle, Joe Higuchi, Jim Johnston, music guy, Larry Matisic, James Melby, Bill Mercer, Gorilla Monsoon, Rossi Ogawa, Reg Parks, Morris Siegel, Tony Schiavone, George Scott, Kevin Sullivan, Mike Tenay, Ted Turner, Jesse Ventura, that's a new one, Roy Welch, and Stanley Weston. Who sticks out to you on this one?
I voted for it again this year. And then the beginning, you mentioned somebody who I immediately forgot because you kept throwing that was a shoe in. Who was the first couple again?
Dave Brown, Zane Bresloff, and Zane Bobby Bruns.
Zane Bresloff. Bresloff is single-handedly responsible for the turnaround of WCW. Zane Bresloff was a major wrestling federation's expansion era. The love that he deserves, and the man played a massive role in the latter half of the 20th century.
So last year I voted for Bobby Davis, of course, Larry Matisic, Tony Schiavone, Morris Siegel, Mike Tenay, Ted Turner, and Roy Welch. The only guy that made it last year out of those folks that I voted for was Bobby Davis. I'm interested in Jesse Ventura as a non-wrestler. Just for his, he was the top heel commentator. I know Roddy Piper came out before him, but I think Jesse Ventura really redefined what that was. And it was way bigger than Roddy Piper ever was as far as a heel commentator, not as a wrestler, but a heel commentator. Piper, a lot of people don't know that Piper started it in Georgia and did it there for a little bit. But Jesse, when he came in, like, he just fucking ran with that thing, and he was in just so many more homes doing what he did, and he was doing it at such a high level. And did a great, and what first six WrestleManias, all the early Saturday night's main events, you know, 33 million people for the Andre the Giant, you know, winning the title, the big switcheroo with the Hebner brothers. I think he's got a good case. I think he's got an argument. I need to do some research on it. He came into WCW and he bombed essentially, but I don't think that outweighs what he was able to do in the WWF.
Did Jesse bomb WCW? I mean, how can you blame? I don't understand how you feel he bombed WCW.
The people that worked with him said that he was lazy. He didn't do any research. Eric Bischoff couldn't wait to get rid of him. Like, you know, Jim Ross couldn't stand him. Like that's what I mean. Like, Jesse always entertained me, but they said that he didn't do anything to elevate the product. That was the knock on him in WCW.
I think that might just be some sour grapes for how much he was getting paid, to be quite honest with you.
Probably.
Yeah. Jesse was, I mean, when Jesse leaves, like everything you said about Jesse, they said about Bobby Heenan too. So what's the common denominator in that? You know what I'm saying?
Vincent Guerrilla.
Well, when Bobby Heenan was in WCW, that was the exact same knockout.
Oh yes. Okay.
So I think the problem was WCW, right? And Eric Bischoff and those guys. I think Jesse's great. And Jesse was able to parlay, and I love Roddy Piper. I think Jesse was able to parlay being that heel commentator into a film career and into a legitimate governorship.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen without him being like Jesse Ventura does not get there without being the body. So I think that Jesse Ventura is a really good case for it, actually.
Yeah, I think he's got a great case. Plus, he was in Predator.
Yeah,
I don't even know if I need to go on. Like, he's in Predator.
I'm good. I'm sold.
Running yeah, yeah. It's like I don't know if I need to sell anybody and then like fucking watch Predator and then get back to me and try to argue against it. I'm sticking with my Mike Tenay vote. Garrett Kidney had a compelling case for him on Twitter. I mean, like the only other person to win as many Announcer of the Year awards as Mike Tenay is Jim Ross. And Jim Ross is in the Hall of Fame. And Mike Tenay was just in the second biggest promotion when he was doing that. And Mike Tenay was winning those awards when TNA was really bad a lot of the time. So, and WCW was bad too when he was. I think he might have won when he was in WCW. I have to do the research again. I have to go back and read some of my notes from last year. But I think I'm sticking with Tenay this year. I don't see anybody that's going to come in and knock him off. But I'm pretty sure I'm adding Jesse Ventura. I think I'm there with him.
I'm in with Jesse. Good call.
All right. Grand Wizard and Koichi Yoshizawa. I totally missed those guys. They were on the next page. My bad. Sorry, everybody. But I'm not voting for Grand Wizard. Sorry.
He was the other manager. No.
Yeah. Let's see. Gerard says SRS also had to talk to Kenny about his comment because Gail speaks out against WWE plenty of times. Yes. Yes, she does. King of the North is back. Says, look at these fucking guys. I got to give a big shout out to King. He saved my bacon the other night because, you know, I grew up in a trailer, right, JD? Like, I'm like
I know car
kind of trailer park guy. And I could be a bit of a meathead at times, bit of a not the most sensitive person in the world. Also, was in the military for 21 years, and I don't, you know, I have a bit of a macho personality at times. I didn't take Masha Slamovich beating up her boyfriend very seriously. I was just like, oh, like that's not that big of a deal. But at the time I didn't know that she was hitting him with frying pans and all kinds of other shit. I didn't know that. So he like got in my DMs like, Mike, you need to delete these tweets because you're an idiot. And I was like, thank you. I didn't know the rest of it. I didn't see how bad it was. And it got really dark there for a while too. In those text messages, like, oh shit, I need to scale this back.
Bro, I'll be honest. I consider myself a fairly tough guy. If my wife clocked me with a frying pan, my ass would drop. Like, so yes. I'm kind of...
Yeah, I didn't know she hit him with a frying pan when I was saying that. I was like, a woman slapping her dumbass boyfriend around is like Wednesday in my neighborhood. It's not that big of a deal to me. other way around, very big deal. But if like the wife is doing it to the dumbass husband, it's like, oh, okay. Like Rita's just going off the rails again, but she'll be fine tomorrow. You know, like that kind of stuff. So, but thankfully I have good people in my life to tell me when I'm being stupid. But he also said start Mac Jones. You know what? I think Brock Purdy's still injured, and his passes were sailing on him today. He kept throwing it over everybody's heads through two interceptions and had a fumble and lost the game. Well, what a dick that guy is. Keep it Wolfson said Jim Johnston deserves it. I mean his music did play a big part of WWF, but I don't think any of the music's particularly very good. Okay, I thought CFO was better.
I do agree with that. I'll be honest with you, man. You think of the biggest WWF in that era, didn't have a Jim Johnston. Randy Savage didn't have a Jim Johnston song. You know, yeah. Demolition didn't. Warrior did. That's about it. Like,
yeah, you know, he did Warrior and Undertaker and Vader. And I think Shawn Michaels was done by Jimmy Hart.
Yes. Jimmy Hart. So I think somebody's Jimmy Hart, Jim Johnson gets a lot of credit for some of the stuff that Jimmy Hart actually did. Like, yeah. Brett's theme song, that was Jimmy Hart. So, I mean, like, I think Jim Johnson's overrated, personal opinion.
Yeah. King says, JD, I had to tell him she hit him with a frying pan before he woke up. Yeah, that's what turned me around. I thought she just smacked him. But no, it was like the frying pan is what did it for me. I was like, oh, shit. Like, you can kill the dude in the frying pan. Dude, yeah.
She needs some therapy, man. That's true. That's pretty freaking.
Yeah, her boyfriend, Akira, kind of like, so I think there's a lot of drug addict accusations out there too. And like seeing some of the tweets and stuff. And doing some of the work that I've done throughout my life, I would tend to agree that she might be. That's not for me to say. That's her decision. But she might need to get some help for that and probably for some anger issues. And look, I'm one of those guys. You know me, JD. I don't throw people away, especially if they're young and they just got some problems, even if it's anger problems. I think that she could probably come back for it. But then again, like, yes, I am a macho meathead, but I'm also a big softy. I like to accept people back in. I always think that the prodigal son can return. The prodigal daughter can return. Hopefully she gets the help she needs, and she's back in pro wrestling one day.
2 weeks ago on the show, I lamented Lane Staley's death because people wrote him off as just an addict. This was 20-some odd years ago. So, like, yeah, no, I'm a firm believer that if people have problems, they can. Hope she does.
Yeah. Yep, same here. All right, guys, it is getting late. It is 11:30 p.m. for me. I do have to get up early in the morning. I got to go to work. So that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. Please subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no way from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no way.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.